This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. 10 years this month I've been doing this. Thank you for letting me into your ears, your brain, your home, your eyes with our audio and our video podcasts to advance the service, auto repair service industry. Glad to have you here. I've got Emily Chung with me. It's going to be a lot of fun. But first, before we get into what Emily is doing, a great, great word from our great partners. More than 16% of light-duty vehicles on the road are EV and hybrid. Is your shop ready to safely and properly service them? Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. Hey, let's face it, your shop management system is the most critical tool in your shop, and NAPA Trax will move your shop into the SMS fast lane with on-site training, 6 days a week support, and local representation. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. So, Emily, thank you so much for being here.
Good to be back.
Yeah, it's a great episode. We're going to talk about transition of selling your business. We're going to talk about learning key tasks that should be completed by the owner, no one else. What are the critical processes that's non-negotiable from an owner's perspective? And so much more. We've not really done an episode where I've sat and talked to an owner who sold their business. You know, and what can we all learn from it? Because I would bet that a large portion of my audience is thinking about this. Or working on some kind of transition plan.
And just even to be ready for a transition, right? A lot of us who have the business, you never know. You just never know when that opportunity might come.
So Emily, former owner of Auto Niche in Markham, Ontario, done a bunch of great podcasts with us. Appreciate all the support you've given us. Please don't go away. Hang out. Let's continue to do something. Just so that everyone understands Emily's background, licensed automotive service tech in Canada, automotive writer, Automotive Business School of Canada at Georgian College, and holds a degree from the University of Waterloo in psychology and business. Great, great resume.
Thank you. Cost me a lot of money.
Yeah, I guess it does. Continuing education, it's an investment. It didn't cost you anything. So Emily wrote to me. She goes, Carm, I sold a business, got a great idea for an episode. Let's do this thing. And I said, yeah. So we scheduled and you're here. Wow. Okay. So talk to me, babe. Yeah.
So sold the business about 2 months ago. Now, my transition time was quite short. It was about 2 weeks only, but that was negotiated in the sale. So that was a little bit different than I think what a lot of sales are like, which are longer transition time. Nevertheless, coming out of it, I was talking to other shop owners and other people that have bought and sold businesses too. And I think there, we all understand, like, you know, what needs to be done, and we get kind of the high level stuff. The reality is when you're in the middle of a transition, things just go. It's busy and you get distracted. And then especially if you're transitioning in a time when the business is still running, then, you know, you've got all the regular day-to-day stuff to do too. And then again, depending on the size of the business, like at my shop, we're a relatively small shop in the sense that it's me as well as the service advisors and then the technicians. So I don't necessarily have many layers of management. So there's those things to consider too. So that's what I wanted to share with you. That's how you and I started the conversation online, is, you know, maybe a few tips of what are the things to actually go through or make sure you think through. Do you want to cover this in your transition? And one piece I did want to share with everybody is the way how I told my employees, you know, so this is before the sale. I felt called to sell the shop about a year and a year and a half ago. So quite some time ago, before I listed the shop, I decided that I was going to tell my staff that I'm going to list the shop for sale. So I recognize that that's something different because I know a lot of owners, they probably would not confirm they sold the shop until later because they don't, there's this kind of mindset that you don't want to spook anybody, right? Which I totally get. So just in my situation though, that's not what I felt called to. So I really felt like in order to honor the employees that worked for me, I wanted to let them know ahead of time.
So many worry about the fact that, she's selling, so I'll go find a job somewhere else because I'm not sure what life would be like after Emily, right?
Yeah, and that was a real concern. That was what was going on in my head, you know? And at the end of the day, I just felt peace with telling them ahead of time and whatever happens, happens. Now, of course, there's a whole strategy to how to tell them. What happened was I knew I was going to list on a certain day, or I knew that, you know, I was going to go to market on a certain day. So about a week before, I chose to tell them during the week. Like, I'm a firm believer that we don't give our staff any kind of news, you know, the last day before the weekend, because I don't want them to mull it over for the few days, right? So I tell them basically that, you know, I feel like I've been called to sell. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's not going to be tomorrow. It could be in a few months. It could be in a year. It ended up being a year and a half, right? And I told my staff basically that if you are thinking that if this is the reason why you're going to leave this shop and try a new shop, then you may as well stay here and try it with the new owner, because at least you'll know your other staff members, you'll know the customers, you'll know the process. And then if you're going to jump anyways, then, you know, why don't you stick it and stick here and try it with a new owner? And then if you don't like it, then you can go. So that's the approach that I took. I did tell them too that, you know, what the reality is, I'm never promised another day with them. Every day they wake up and they make the decision to come into work for me. And because I honor that, and because I honor the time that they've spent with me, I'm choosing to tell them ahead of time, knowing that it might risk, you know, the uncertainty.
Big move. It was, as they would say in the industry, a ballsy move, but yeah.
So I told them, now here's the thing, it really helped me later on, because again, this is going on for like a year, year and a half. Well, when the time came and I was much closer to the deal, and then sure enough, closing day came and the finality of it all, then I told my staff, by the way, I have officially sold and it's going to happen this time. And the people who had the news a year, year and a half before, I mean, my staff were happy for me. The ones that I told before, they were happy for me. Now, I did have a couple of people that came in newer and I did not disclose to them that I was selling. They were with me for maybe one person I hired literally like 2-3 weeks before the shop officially sold. The other person maybe just a couple months. So really wasn't that long of a working time for me. Those people, they were surprised for sure. But I look back into this and I think, wow, imagine if I didn't say anything at all. Everybody would be surprised, right? I think for my situation, it worked out as well.
Yeah. Listen, I've been involved in selling. I've been involved as an individual in a buying mode where you ask the people that you're buying the business from not to say anything if they agreed with you. Obviously, they wanted to do what, if you will, their conscience, their loyalty guided them to want to do. You know, I've been in front of the new teams in the past and said, hey, we're excited. Glad to be here. You all got great jobs. There's a great business. Nothing's going to change. And that's not necessarily always true in any business. And I think we, as people who have been acquired in the past, realize that there is just no way that they're going to be like Emily. There's just no way their processes will be identical. There's just no way that all of that particularly happens. And I hope your people stick around, and I hope they're still there, and I hope they give it their best. How long is it been? A couple months now?
Yeah, a couple months. So the buyer did acquire everybody else at the same time. So everybody did agree to stay on. And I think that, you know, like you said, it should go both ways, right? With the buyer as well, to honor that, you know, things will remain relatively the same until the transition, the full transition time takes place. Nobody likes change, right? Nobody likes change. And so really, I think out of our email together, it was, okay, well, what are the things that we can, you know, maybe think about or think through to make sure that the change goes a little more smoothly for everybody?
Did you say to the buyer, hey, look, I believe you need to pay attention in this particular area and not bump that around at all?
Yeah. So like I said, I had very short transition time. And I tried my best in terms of, you know, what to cover. And this came out of this, and this is what's coming out of, you know, our episode today, is just different things that we really should cover with a new buyer. And one thing I will say before we get into those is I've spoken with other buyers too, who have had shops and they'll acquire another shop. And then they kind of have this attitude of, well, you know, we don't need them because we've already done it. We've already done it over here. So we're just going to, you know, copy the systems over here and kind of expand this way. So it's okay, you know, with the previous owner, you don't need to stay that long and all the stuff. And I do caution about that kind of thinking. It's true, you already have a system and it's already successful in one place. And then the idea is you can copy it. At the same time, you're dealing with human people that are not copied. Like, you know, so there's that caveat of, okay, just be careful. So one piece is like that I think is a huge benefit to having the current owner, like previous owner and the new owner. We got to sit down and talk about the people. Yes, you have technicians. Yes, you have supervisors, but you want to know okay, who is this person? Not just their experience and how long they've been there, what can they diag and what are they good at? You want to know about their family, because not everybody is motivated on the same thing, right? Maybe this one appreciates a little bit more time off. This one appreciates, you know, 10 cents on every filter. I don't know. But you really should have a conversation and lay out the people and lay out what are their motivations? What are their goals? Where does this person want to be in another year, 5 years, you know, and talk through that side of the people aspect of things, not just simply their resume and, you know, what cards can they diag and that kind of tactical stuff.
It just sounds just too logical not to be a buyer coming in and putting your arms around your new people, your new staff, and say, hey, it's not about the deal. It's not about the transaction. It's not about the process. It's about you. How could someone, again, I'm in my opinion, that to me, from a buyer's perspective, should be way up on top of that list.
It should be. And I just wonder if sometimes in the transition side of things that it just gets so busy and lost. A lot of times people think, well, you know, even if the current owner goes, I can always talk to the service advisor and I can get to know them, you know, myself, which is true. At the same time, don't you want to talk to the person that's been managing them for the last how many years?
You just hit it, because I wrote down the words culture fit. And I'm wondering how much a seller, and I know this is crazy, I got my money, I got exactly what I want, this is great, they made me a pure offer. Would anybody who is the seller want to do some discovery on if this is going to be a culture fit for my people and my clients?
Yeah, maybe. Like, that should be part of the process, you would think, right? So the fit is important. I think as a new owner, you would want to know how to manage these people. Again, like I said, what makes them tick? And it's not to say that now every owner is different. So it might be that, you know, the tech and that previous owner didn't get along, whatever, you know, personality differences. So it's not to say that that previous owner's opinion is everything. Having said that, it gives you a little bit of insight into the staff that you acquired. So that would be one piece, is to take some time to learn about the people that you bought, not just their technical skills, really what makes them tick, how they are as a person, what do they really care about, you know, where do they want to be in a year's time, 5 years time, you know, what are their goals, what are their personal goals, not just, yes, the Sopranos, their goal is to become licensed, got it, I think everybody knows this, right? But what is the apprentice's personal goal? Where do they want to be?
Really good stuff. I have a question about this individual or company that purchased you. Were they a multi-shop operator, or was this going to be their second or third store, or was this your first venture in?
First venture in. So the learning curve is steep.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I think they were quite brave to take it on their own.
I love that word, brave. I love it.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, back to your point about being the fit. I think that, you know, at the time when we were negotiating, they were a great fit. Now, when I look back at it, I do think that some things were rushed in the transition.
Let's talk about that. Is it rushed on your part, their part?
It was rushed, I think, for multiple things. One is there was just because of the short time of the transition, which again, like I said, we had agreed upon, negotiated upon. But I think too that there were certain things where, for example, we did not spend enough time talking about the things that only I do. So there are things that only the owner does, only. And as much duplication as you might have, you know, I mean, of course, I leave notes for my administrator if I'm, you know, gone and that kind of thing. But I mean, you know, she's only done it maybe once or twice. But in my shop at the time, you know, I was the only person to run payroll. I was the only person to go through the hours and calculate it all and enter it into the payroll. Now, I know that's something that not every owner does. Some owners have, you know, other people who do this. But just for example, that was one thing that only I did. And so to not have had the conversation of, hey, this is, and actually go through, this is what I do, you know? So that I think was a challenge for the new buyer. And you would think that payroll, and this is also leading to some of the other points that you and I had, which was, what are the non-negotiable processes, right? Payroll obviously is one. You gotta, if you're the buyer, that you need to make sure your first payroll is on time, if not early, right? And it's not as easy. Like, it should be easy because you should be just theoretically calling up somebody for a payroll provider and switching it over. But I think what a lot of people don't understand is, or don't see necessarily, is all the nitty gritty little details that we all do to make the shop run. You know, I had a workspace dashboard of all the items, right? And this dashboard was huge. And it was things like WSIB, workers' comp, it was payroll, it was like every single line item. And it was a lot, you know? So this is what I mean, is that I think sometimes in the busyness of the transition, certain things get lost. But in some other people's shop, it might be that, you know, only certain accounts are handled by the owner.
Are you an NAPA Auto Care Center who is ready to take your shop to the next level? Then the Premier Tier NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified program is exactly what you need. Gold Certified Auto Care Centers provide customers with a consistent experience no matter where they are in the U.S. Now, this means they are more likely to return and support your shop or find your Gold Certified Auto Care Center while on the road. Gold Certified members can maximize technology, increase their local marketing opportunities, and have a fully trained team that keeps up with the latest trends. Simply put, the Gold Certified NAPA Auto Care program powered by your local brand will set you apart. A true partnership is a two-way street. Shops must meet specific criteria to be eligible for the many benefits of Gold. Now, NAPA Auto Care rewards its most committed partners, their Gold certified members, with free premium shop referrals on the NAPA online locator, annual marketing dollars, an enhanced warranty, training opportunities, program rebates, and so much more. Are you ready to get started? Contact your local NAPA sales representative to discuss your eligibility and apply today. More than 16% of light-duty vehicles on the road are EV and hybrid. Is your shop ready to safely and properly service them? Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. Hey, take your auto care center to the next level, the gold level, with the NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. This program is for the best of the best who can provide a consistent consumer experience and earn the trust of returning and new customers. Talk to your NAPA sales representative about how you can become a gold certified shop. Hey, let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. Now, it all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. And having local representation is a huge plus. Customizing Trax to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, a representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. Trax always has the flexibility to do business how you need to do it, which means it can also grow as your business grows. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business. Yes, a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at NAPATRAX, that's NAPATRACS.com. You want to get humble? Write down everything you do. I mean, you may need a whole entire month because you don't do things daily, you don't do things weekly, sometimes you do things bi-monthly. Wow, that is huge. How about the SMS and only the stuff that you would do inside of this shop management system? All the little tiny details. And I guess this is critically important. Let's think about the 30s and 40s somethings that want to own a shop. They don't have an owner mentor, and they're not part of an internal succession plan, so they can learn and observe and be handheld for a few years during the process. I mean, it goes back to why people are struggling today. It was in my backyard, then I rented a place, now I actually have a full-blown shop and I'm struggling, I can't pay my parts bill, blah, 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 because they never became a business person. They just continued to be an individual who works on cars. I love your point. There's this workman's comp notice, this, how about New York State, this federal government, that Canada, this Ontario, that all of that stuff that just comes at you and you have to stop and figure it out. God help a brand new business owner.
Yeah, it's a lot.
You know what I would have done? I would have said, Emily, Listen, you've got to be on call for an entire year. I'd like to meet with you every day for the first 4 weeks, and then I'd like to meet weekly, then monthly for an entire year, because I want to come to you and say, how the hell did you do this?
Yeah, think about it. Even when we say like, okay, we do social media at the shop. Well, within social media, you have how many accounts, then how many times do you post, then what are the posts content? Like as an owner, we say we do these things, but when you divide out individually, then what are the tasks that contribute to these things? It's a lot. The other thing before I forget is a lot of people are like, oh, you got to have processes, right? You want to be able to write down processes and have a book and basically like hand it over. I agree, fully agree. And people don't learn from a book. People don't learn from like a process paper. I can give it to them, no problem. I can write it out. And people don't learn that way. So if you have transition time hands-on with the current owner, you want to go through that stuff, not just have them hand you over the process manual, you know?
I just recently interviewed Bob Ward. The episode released sometime in early March. People got to get to it. And it's about that, making these internal succession plans happen. He's got a brilliant idea. He's a great guy. I've had him on plenty of times in the past. And when you think about anyone today wanting to see your business thrive, to be part of that by finding an internal candidate. And then a big part of the discussion that I talked to a lot of coaches about, if you have plans to ever succeed your business, in every interview that you do with anyone you hire, so what do you want to be when you grow up is the question. And if somebody says, I want to own my own shop, then that's an important checkbox. And then you observe that individual, you watch that individual, and you see, do I have an internal candidate that could be here for my current people, my current customers, and to sustain me and my family in all the years that I want to continue to either hold them paper and earn the rent and all that stuff? I think it's a brilliant move to be a strategic thinker when it comes to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you are planning for the long term, right? I mean, it didn't happen in my case. I do believe that, you know, the ideal situation is to have one grown internally. But that's like with employees. That's not just selling the business, right? The best case scenario is you grow somebody internally. So learning the key tasks that only the owner knows, right? Some of the non-negotiable processes. So by that, I mean, you know, what is it that is the heart and soul of what makes this business run right now? So at AutoNiche, you know, there were critical processes like digital vehicle inspections, like texting communication. You know, what is the unique value proposition of this business? And that in turn, then what are the non-negotiable processes that make up that UVP? Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, sure does.
As a new owner, if you choose to change it, this leads into another point that we were making on email is if you choose to change it, that's okay. Let's say you decide you don't want to do whatever, for example, you don't want to do digital vehicle inspections, whatever, you want to do the video, okay? That's all fine. You can change things. But again, change management is something that is very real. Like you got to be able to take the people from where they were to where you want them to go. And in doing that, you need to understand where they started. So there's time in taking to know the process of these non-negotiable processes. And if you so desire to change it, you got to know this first before you can move the ship, so to speak.
Yeah, I do. And here's what I wrote down. It starts with the client. Now, I may be wrong, but my thought was that the top of the pyramid is the client and everything else down below supports that person. So if I was coming into your business, Emily, and I bought my business and I said, listen, I only need you for a couple of weeks and you can leave, okay? If I was going to do any discovery, I'd say, what does the client come together? What does the client expect from us? Teach me, tell me, what have we been doing for them? I got Emily's take on that and I want to hear yours. As I walk down the aisle, if you will, down to the altar of the greatest business in the world, how am I going to learn what to do? Now, if I was a former owner, I'd say, okay, we're going to do it this way in this business, in this little region of this neighborhood of Toronto, you know, Markham, Ontario. But yet, now my influence and what I know and how I've built my other business, and then it morphs into something. And ultimately, one day, Emily's culture and all that stuff will be out and mine will be in, but you don't kill it on first day, especially if you're brand new to the business. And I'm not being negative here. I'm just saying you bring up such a great point. Be careful as a seller. If you want to see your business thrive, then an individual who may not know much about it needs to spend time to learn it.
Yeah, exactly. I have a friend who also bought into a business, and he chose to actually be the shuttle driver for the first, I don't know how many weeks. So he was a shuttle driver, and he would talk to the customers, and he would, you know, just learn about who the people you were serving at the end of the day, you know? And I thought that was such a great idea, a great way to really understand, you know, what is it that makes this shop special? What is it that maybe the clients want to have a little different, or, you know, what have you? So that's another way, but you're right. You do want to know who is it that your shop is serving. And then how does that translate down to your processes, right? So that was definitely one is to think about or talk through what are the non-negotiable processes that build into the UVP of that particular business that you bought. And then another one I think that we were floating around was what are some of the challenges, learning what are some of the challenges and successes that the owner has had. People are full of ideas, right? There's no shortage of ideas in this world, I think. It's just, are they good ideas or not so good ideas? But anyways, no shortage of ideas. And so if you wanted to do a marketing campaign at, you know, something, right? It would be interesting to ask a question to the owner, hey, did you try it this way? You know, and learn, did it work? Did it not work? And it's not to say you shouldn't do it. It's just, if it didn't work, what happened and how am I going to improve on it? So the idea that you learn based on the previous owner's, you know, success and failures and how do you adapt, right? If you want to revisit a strategy that didn't work for them, you know, or maybe you have some wisdom and, okay, you know what? I should just drop that for now and focus on something else. As part of your purchase price, you were also buying the experience of that owner.
I totally disagree. I mean, I would say, okay, Em, what would you do differently that, you know, you just couldn't get out of your own rut for? I mean, we're all guilty of that. You know, I chug along over here, even though I know it's not quite right and it's not working well in my business. Those are great questions to ask of the seller.
Yeah. Again, it's not to say that, you know, the campaign or the strategy you want won't work. It's to ask the question of, did you try it? What didn't work? Because then I can adapt from there. Or at least I have better information to make a change if I want to.
Think of a bakery shop. I just bought a bakery shop. And people come to my bakery shop because they like the taste of my cakes and pies and cupcakes and cookies. And I go ahead and change it and people start buying that stuff and they don't like it because they've come to love what you do and my business is poor and I have to start from scratch cultivating a brand new client base because I ignored the client.
Even in the bakery shop, say, well, you know, have you thought about, you know, hey, like what if we bring in, you know, pies? Have you tried that? Ask the current, you know, owner or the old owner. You know, have you tried bringing in other products and how did that go? Well, actually, yeah, a couple of years ago, we tried that. It really didn't work because of XYZ. Now you can make a better decision. Do you still want to bring that in and maybe change up how it was marketed or figure out, you know, why didn't it work? Or do you want to say, well, you know what, let's just leave that on the table for a little bit. Let's focus on something else then.
Was it tough to come up with a decision to sell?
I felt called to sell. So I'm Christian. I felt like God was calling me to sell. It was tough in the sense that I spent about a month just going back and forth, you know, in prayer and asking, like, are you sure? Because I started the business with the end in mind. I have always thought that I was going to sell the shop. 16 years ago, I thought I was going to sell the shop. So I just didn't realize that it was that time. You know, I thought my horizon was much longer. So I'm glad that I started off that way. I had a little bit more of a separation, I think, than maybe some of the other owners that I know.
Yeah, you're a young person, Emily.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What are you, 32, 33? Yeah.
Oh my gosh, no, much more north than that.
Whatever. I'm complimenting you because my point is that so many people that are looking to sell have gray hair like me. And they've been in it for themselves 25, maybe even 30 years. And you've been at it for 16. I believe that's the number, right? 16?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so interesting to see someone at the height of their career. You've got a lot of options, a lot of things you can do. You're an educator, you're a writer. I mean, it's not like, oh my God, that's all I've ever done my whole life is get my hands dirty and swim in the deep end of the pool. And now in fact, most of those people can't even think of selling because they don't have a lot to sell. At least from a business person's perspective, you've grown your business to the point where it is and was successful. And this person could literally walk in and say, oh my God, look what Emily left me. This is really cool. This is great. There's not a lot I have to do. At least that's from my thing.
No shop is perfect. So there was still a lot of room for us to grow. At the same time, the foundation was there. You know, we had a healthy average ticket. We had a healthy door rate, right? And so we had a lot of key processes in place and a lot of metrics that were fine-tuned. And so we had the foundation for sure. And I think knowing that I was going to sell at some point in the future helped, because every decision I made then contributed to, can I sell this at some point, whether it's a year and a half from now or 10 years from 16 years from now, whatever that might be. Like I said, I don't know. As a business owner, I don't know why else I would start a business other than to sell it. That's just my personal mindset. So starting it from day one, 16 years ago, I knew I was going to sell. So that's sort of how I went through the journey of deciding that I was going to sell.
Michael Gerber's book says every decision you make in your business, make it because it depend on if you sell it.
Yeah, it's true. So that is some wisdom there for sure.
Any other great advice you could give to our either buyers or sellers off the top of your head?
The last thing that I thought about was to just ask the question of from the seller, ask the question to the current owner of, where is the business going in the next 3 to 5 years? You want to know where the short-term and long-term goals of this business is going to be. Not necessarily because you will stick with it. It's the idea of, where is this ship headed? And if I want to change course, at least I know how I'm going to change it, where I'm going to change it. So, you know, for our shop, my desire short-term was to start getting into Teslas, right? And really focusing more on that market. We were already in the EV market. Now it was just more, let's pick a brand and just really run with it. And again, whether the new buyer chooses to do that or not, totally on them. I fully respect that they, you know, they can change the shop however they want. If you choose to change it though, at least you will know, hey, we've been spending some time building our path towards here. So if you want to change it, you got to now either move it this way or come back a bit, you know, up to you. But at least you know sort of what you're dealing with, rather than not having that history, not knowing sort of where the strategic goals were headed, and then trying to implement your own.
It makes plenty of sense. How would a buyer not want to ask a seller, what were your short-term and long-term goals in the business? In fact, I think if you buy a business that doesn't at least have that kind of think going, I think you continue to worry about each of the steps that you're going on, and is the wood broken as you step up? Because if you would have said, listen, we're thinking of Teslas, well, what have you done to try to get there? Well, you could say the education that I provided for our people, blah, 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 and some of the tools that we've purchased, and you know how we've studied Teslas, and we've had a couple of them in the shop. Wow. So this wasn't just a figment of your imagination. This is something that you actually were trying to create some tangible steps that you can, again, walk up. It's a great move in an acquisition mode from a buyer. It's great to be able to see, you know, so many years of profit and loss statements. It's great to be able to see the balance sheet, the cash flow, and all that stuff, and the payroll. But wouldn't it be cool to ask for, can I see your 3 and 5 year strategic plan, or what your pro forma looks like for the next 5 years?
My experience with some of the potential buyers now, right, is yes, we can look at the documents, we can look at the numbers, right? But there is so much more to that. It's no different than when my customers price shop us and they call and they ask, well, how much are brakes? You know, they're just looking at the number, but you know, we got to tell them like, okay, so here's the warranty, here's the quality of the parts, here's what we're doing. You know, all this stuff, there's all that backstory, the people that you acquire, again, like I said, what makes them tick, the long-term goals of the company, like all of that is not stuff you can discern in just the numbers, right? And the average ticket, that kind of thing. So I think that a lot of times the potential buyers, at least in my experience, they were looking at that and they're kind of thinking, okay, so this is where the shop is and here's my experience and where I can bring into the shop to grow to the next level. But there was not a lot of understanding of, okay, what did it take to get us to here? And how am I going to move it to there?
Brilliant stuff. As always, I learned so much when I talked to you. Would you keep coming back on my show and bring some of your great wisdom?
Of course. I'm always humbled to be here with you, Carm.
Yeah, I am too. And you're only an hour and a half away from it. You should come to Buffalo. We should do lunch.
Sounds good. Let's make it happen.
I love it. Emily Chung, former owner, Auto Niche, and Markham, Ontario. Thank you for all your wisdom and taking us a little bit inside the transaction and helping our listener think about, either from a buyer or seller's perspective, some of the stuff that you need to think about. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.